Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit matchup to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello and welcome to episode 57 of the Uncovered Podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi. You can find me at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, of course, as always, is Jared Kimber.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Well, today, Bangladesh defeated Sri Lanka by 3 wickets. Shakib scored 82, Shanto 90, and Jayartha Salanka's 100 went in vain. But we don't care about any of that. We want to talk about the timeout, Jared. And it's quite, one of those polarizing things that's happening right now in cricket, because a lot of ex-cricketers and former cricketers are infuriated. And some people are saying that it's within the laws of the game. And, you know, as someone who's played cricket from a very early age, the timeout rule was something that was told to me on my very first day of cricket camp. You know, the different modes of dismissal. But then the complication over here that's come in is that Angelo was apparently out at the crease by 1 minute 55 seconds, and 2 minutes is the World Cup, you know, law or rule after which a batter can be timed out. And then the strap issue happened with the helmet. So, yeah, where are you at with this?
Yeah, it is. It's way more complicated. Like, you made it sound complicated, and it's way more complicated than what you said. Because, so I did a whole piece on it today, as you know. In the time since I've written that, I think I found about 4 new pieces of information, right? And it keeps coming. Like, for instance, Angelo Matthews did his press conference at the end, and he said, he kept talking about common sense. Cricket needs common sense, blah, blah, blah. Angelo Matthews was at the crease and then left the crease without telling anyone why he was leaving the crease, right? There's so many layers to this of Angelo, and I'm using Angelo's words here. Angelo said that the umpires didn't know that his strap had broken. Well, if they didn't know his strap had broken, all they saw was a player leaving the crease. Probably in their minds, they thought just because he wanted a different helmet, right? So do you want me to try and go through all the different weird parts of this, or do you want to poke me, or how do you want to do it? Because there's like a million different things here.
I want to know a few things in particular. One, why is the ICC rule 3 minutes and why is the World Cup 2 minutes? That one's MCC, odd for me. The second one, the MCC, sorry, my bad. And then also, you know, the fact that Angelo could have batted out that over. It was an over by Shakib, right? He was a spinner. He didn't have to wear a helmet, right? He could have just played one ball and then gotten a new
one. So 2 minutes was the traditional law. So in 1775, that was what was written into the game. That stayed there for a long time. The actual timed out law doesn't come until 1980. But you could be ruled out absent if the umpires got annoyed at you if it was more than 2 minutes back in those days. Remember, 1775, what would they even had? Like, how were they telling times with a sundial? So I do think that's the first fun bit of all this, right? Why is it 2 minutes or 3 minutes? I think in white ball cricket, the idea was that you just want to move the game on a little bit quicker, right? Yeah. And I'm not sure what the tests playing conditions are. I haven't looked at those recently. But I just think they just saw it in international cricket. There's enough different stoppages, right? Let's just get through this a little bit more. I think there's T20 competitions that have even had a rule that you have to be on the ground. Do you have to swap over with the player on the ground was one regulation. So that's why we saw a lot of guys walking off the ground and stopping near the boundary rope and waiting for the other guy to step on. And I think there might have been another one that was you had to be on the ground within a minute or something in T20 cricket. Again, speeding it up, right? So that's the difference. The second question was, I've now completely forgotten what your second question was.
What was my second question? Damn, I've completely forgotten about it as well. Anyone in the comments?
That's because there is so many ridiculous layers to this that...
Oh, yeah. Why did he need a helmet to bat out that over? It was an over by Shakib.
So he doesn't need a helmet, but I think in a sport where we are talking about concussion protocols and everything, I think it would be silly for the umpires to have said, just wear that helmet. Having said that, that conversation wasn't had because you could, and Angelo Matthews has now confirmed this, but you can see it on the footage. He just turns around and goes and gets another helmet, right? So maybe Erasmus would have said, are you sure? Because you can bat with a helmet without a chin strap on, right? So. Yeah. I know a lot of people who I grew up playing with who didn't have a chin strap on. It's not recommended. And if you read the instructions, they always say use a chin strap. And there's many different reasons for that. But it's not recommended. Also, you don't have to wear a helmet for a spinner, but he might have wanted to or anything else. I think these are really good questions. But I think in this particular case, I don't think we should be forcing people to bat without helmets because of this sort of thing. If you really want to drill down on it, I think a lot of the helmet stuff comes down to, you'll remember this, actually. Do you remember the test match when Pakistan batted, had an extra half an hour against Australia at the Gabba?
Yeah.
Right? So I was at that test match and I spoke to like 50 people. It was like me and Mal Farrell running from end to end, trying to get as many different people to talk to as possible to try and work out why it happened. And if you remember back, it was that Steve Smith had said to the umpire, I can't remember if it was Moraine, but I don't think it was. It might have been Gunnar Gould, actually. Said to the umpire, so is the 30 minutes automatic, right? And Gunnar Gould took that as, oh, he wants the 30 minutes. And Gunnar's like, no, you have to ask for them. So then when it started, he played the 30 minutes, right? Because he'd already had that conversation. Whereas in what should have happened is a proper conversation between two human people would have been, do I have to ask for the extra 30 minutes or not? And then Gunnar Gould said, you have to ask for them. Do you want them now? You know, do you want us to go ahead with them? And that never happened. And you look at this situation, it's a perfect example of like Angelo Matthews talking about common sense and all these sorts of things. But Angelo Matthews didn't just tell them what had happened, which is that that his strap had broken in his helmet. And so the umpires are looking at it going, he came all the way out of here with the wrong helmet. What's wrong with him? Right? So they're already a bit agitated at that. Then I think, you know, you then have so many other layers that I'm sure we can get to afterwards here. But while Matthews was wrong, it is very important to note that as you and I both know the law, but he would have thought he was already out there, right? I don't think players know that you need to be ready to receive the ball. And he might have thought he was ready to receive the ball when the helmet broke. But if everyone else doesn't know that, et cetera. But the point being is, now, if this same thing happened to Matthews today, or maybe even another player, Matthews would tell the umpire, right? But why didn't he do that? And this is the funny, funny little bit. It's because you don't know you need an alibi, Bayram, until the police step up on your door and go, what were you doing on the night of Tuesday, 17th of October? And you're like, I was in my underwear watching Duckman repeats, right? And they were like, well, okay. we think you murdered this person. And you're like, no, I didn't. You don't know you need an alibi. Why would Angelo Matthews have ever thought that he needed an alibi for timed out? Because he was already out on the ground and no one had ever been given out timed out before in an international match. It wouldn't have even occurred to him.
Yeah, well, here's the interesting thing, right? So we looked at the footage, or at least we've been told that the footage is there, which has a timer on and Matthews makes it to the crease on time. And then the helmet thing happens after. Now, looking towards the future, do you think there might be a situation where the law might require updating, perhaps to accommodate situations like this? Because there are a lot of people in the comments who are asking, oh, what if someone slips off a banana peel or steps on their shoelaces or the side screen is being moved? So there are a lot of permutations over here.
Yeah, so side screen being moved or anything else doesn't really matter, right? Because is the batter in the position to face the ball? Are they ready? After 2 minutes, Angelo Matthews was not ready to face a delivery, right? So that is on him at that point. As I said, I'm not blaming him because he never thought this would happen. And he made a simple little error where he just didn't say, sorry, guys, this is broken. Do you mind if I just get a new one? Which is a normal thing he should have done and would not. My guess is he would normally say that. It's very rare a batter will turn around and just call for something on without talking to the umpires, right? But it's just an error that he made when he went out there. I think the gray area.
No, complete your thought.
So I think the gray area is, and me and Abhishek Mukherjee have been talking about this pretty much all day, is what is ready to face the ball, right? Or ready to receive the ball? Because at the 1:50 mark, Angelo Matthews is the only player, or the only person really ready for that ball. I think maybe the wicketkeeper's in his position. Square leg umpire is not ready. The main umpire, Maria Erasmus, is fiddling with the stumps, and Shakib is talking to the field, right? At that point, Matthews jiggles his helmet and something breaks loose, right? Mm-hmm. That's absolutely fine. But he was actually at the crease and ready. Now, the reason this all gets tricky and the reason these laws exist in the first place is because you could race out to the crease and then faff around.
Yeah.
Right? And so and we're not saying Matthews tried to do any time delaying because I don't see any reason why he would have. And I we saw the thing break, so I don't think there's any reason to suggest that. I promise you, I've played with cricketers. I've been around professional cricketers who've admitted this. I've talked about the Ishan Sharma story before. There have certainly been cricketers who have tried to delay games by saying that there's something wrong with their equipment. I brought this bat out, but it's not the right bat. It's not the one I wanted. Oh, I forgot to put my thigh pad on. Oh, well, someone's going to have to bring me a thigh pad out and all this sort of stuff.
Very recently, there was an Afghan batter who didn't wear his box or something. There's also that story.
These things happen all, and sometimes that just happens. Tailenders do it all the time. The Ishan Sharma one's a perfect example of Ishan Sharma, they could have sent him out with two right gloves to delay the game. It's also possible a tail ender picked up two right-handed gloves, right? I want to say Faf. I reckon I covered a game where Faf didn't have his thigh pad on and realized when he was out in the middle. Like, these things actually happen like all the time. I think from that perspective, you've got to understand that those things happen. But you also have to understand that the opposite happens and players do exploit these things and do know what they're doing. And, have you ever in a cricket game purposely untied your shoelaces to delay a game?
Well, I mean, I've never played at that level. Never occurred to me that.
Doesn't matter what level you're at. I've done that, right? I've done it more than once. I actually got caught by an umpire once who said, I just saw you untie your shoelaces. And I said, the knot was uncomfortable. And he's looking at me, he's going, and he literally said, you've got 10 seconds to retie those and face the next ball. And that was his, but he caught me many other times. I've done all sorts of things to delay the game. Players do that. That's why these laws exist. Mm. But I do think there is a grayness in that whole receive the ball situation. Mm. But honestly, I think communication is the big problem here. There's also procedural problems, right? So, The ICC send out Richard Holdstock, who's the fourth umpire, right?
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with the dismissal, but had to front the cameras. And then it turns out was probably given incorrect information. Talk about four errors. Like there. Yeah. So if you think about this, right? So the ICC said, we looked it up and I know they do this for a fact. I've seen them do it before where they time it. So the batter goes out, they press a button and that times how long it's taken for the batter to get out to the middle to make sure that if this is ever an issue. But the interesting thing here is that at what stage does the third because Angelo Matthews is at the crease, remember? He's probably no longer looking at his timer. Then Angelo Matthews walks away. By the time he realizes Angelo Matthews is not there and Maria Erasmus asks, he probably says, oh, well, it's 2:30. That's well over 2 minutes now, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think they had a procedural thing available to them to quickly rewind and see if that was right. And so what happens then is, I think Erasmus was annoyed a little bit that Matthews went off without asking. Shakib is fuming, as we know. He said he was going to war right at that point. And then on top of all that, I think when Erasmus asked the third umpire, he said it was more than 2 minutes. And then they stuck with that until Star and I think a few journalists as well, independently, went back and found a way. And I trust me, I spent about an hour today trying to work out how to do this myself. I went back and found it. So Erasmus was given the wrong information. The funny thing about all that, is, and Holdstock as well, but the funny thing about all that is I don't actually think that saved would have saved Matthews anyway, just because he does leave the crease without telling anyone what is the case. I think under the laws, he was probably definitely out.
Yeah, well, what I'm hearing is lack of communication, procedural issues because they couldn't get that time synced up and there was an error there. And I feel for that fourth umpire as well. He had to kind of, you know, take the blame for it, take the fall for it. No one ever talks about the fourth umpire, right? Which is ridiculous. And I also feel like the fact that Shakib was the captain and he, you know, said that I'm not going to call him back like twice or something, even when Murray suggested, that just adds fuel to the fire because he's just one of those characters, isn't he? And when it comes to the spirit of the game, I don't even know what that means anymore, actually. But what we know of it, Shakib hasn't been the best ambassador, has he?
Yeah, I mean, certainly not. Of all the people to do this, he's probably the most likely. I definitely think he's... In his press conference, he said, I was in a war environment, right? And I'm like, it's a dead rubber. Like, but, you know, the pressure that's been on the Bangladeshi cricketers, I get it. I understand why he felt that way. And we know what he's like. He is a guy that reacts emotionally in the moment. One of the other fielders came up to him. I'm hoping it's Shanto, of course. But one of the other fielders came up to him and said, I told him about the law. So it wasn't like Shakib acted alone or anything from that point of view. And just to go back to the other thing is that I cover cricket a lot. And you know me, I love the laws, right?
Yeah.
And if you listen to me on TalkSport, I reckon about once every five games on TalkSport, you'll hear me say, this batter should be timed out. It happens so regularly. And I really do think that the umpires have allowed this to go far too much. I see Orville saying it shouldn't be out. It should be a five-run penalty. No, the reason it can't be a five-run penalty, Orville, is because what if you just didn't come out, right? Like at what stage? No, I've got no problem with it being given out. And it makes sense. Like when Vasbert Drakes was on the plane, flying from Colombo to East London, it made sense to give him out to move the game forward rather than giving a bunch of penalties that may not even help you as a team anyway.
And to Orwell, I'd just like to say that if I would like to see any update of the law, it would be that for instances where the batter is ready and, you know, the ball is still not balled, maybe then you can, you know, maybe tweak something, maybe update something, maybe put the helmet thing in there because of the how seriously concussions are treated. But, you know, on the same note, Nathan Lyon was already in the long room, right? He wanted to avoid a timeout. So people are aware of these things. And Angelo, too, has to shoulder some responsibility in my books.
Yeah, as I said, I don't want to blame him. But if he just goes to the umpire, I do think this is an entirely different situation. A, Shakib would have known what the situation was. The commentators and everyone watching at home instantly thought he's brought out the wrong helmet, right? And so none of us were on Matthew's side. Not from the timed out is different. That's afterwards. But there was a lot of people going, what, he's brought out the wrong helmet. What's he doing here, right? Which is a fair thing to say. The other thing I would say is that the two-minute rule makes a lot of sense. But if you timed how long it takes the average player to get out on a hat-trick ball, I think you would find that 2 minutes is not enough in certain situations as well, right? Now, what you could say, go if you want to go to the extreme Nathan Lyon side of this. So if I bat at number five, I always tell the openers this. If I bat at number five, I have my pads and my thigh pad on straight away. And I always say, when I'm playing in a new cricket team, I always say to them, this isn't for you. This isn't because I don't think you can open. I don't like to rush. I want to be, all I want to have to do is pick up my gloves. And essentially, you know, and if I'm wearing a helmet or a hat or whatever, have the hat or the helmet ready. Those are the only things I want to do, right? Now, I understand that I'm more prepared than most players are, but you see in hat tricks how unprepared players are. There's obviously the Ganguly story about being in the shower. But just, I find it interesting that the Ganguly story is talked about so much because I do think this happens a lot, that there is 3 and 4 minute delays when players don't come out. Maybe it was just because it was Ganguly and because it was a little bit longer. But yes, this thing happens a lot. And perhaps what we are seeing is a new generation of players who are coming through because of what's going on with the man cat. But also, you know, that we're no longer, this is probably the first era where there aren't any amateurs anymore. Right. So I always say the year that Ross Taylor started cricket, New Zealand domestic players were still amateurs. right? And you had amateur players in Bangladesh, and you had amateur players in Pakistan and Sri Lanka and other places, you know, guys with day jobs, right? This is probably the first era of professionalism. And professionals want to play to the laws of the game. And it's a new generation and a new sport to them in many different ways. T20 changes things as well. So there's lots of different things there.
Yeah. And I mean, no one's going to remember the result of this game, even though this incident made for a firecracker of a Nagin derby. Of course, that rivalry, Bangladesh-Sri Lanka, has been catching fire. And now it's just probably close to the ashes or something. I don't know. I don't know where we're at now with this. But 146-year history of cricket, and we've seen a timeout. So I'll take that as a positive. I'm glad I was alive for it. Anyway, we've talked enough about this. Just quickly on Sri Lanka, there's not much to write home about. But Dilshan Madushankar, and I know our colleague CS wanted us to talk about him, 21 wickets at the World Cup. He's the leading wicket taker. He has 31 wickets in ODI cricket in his career. Mm. So before this World Cup, he just had 10. And he took a fifer versus India. He took 3 today as well. And he has over 46% of Sri Lanka's wickets in this World Cup campaign, which is also a record, which is immense. So any words on him?
Look, I think he's been fantastic. I thought early on in the tournament, he was more of a new ball bowler. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's fine. I think since then, I've been really impressed. I feel like he has kind of gone beyond just being a new ball bowler. And, you know, he's managed to waggle wickets out. I don't think he's a strong bowler all the way through the game yet. But if he's working this out in a World Cup, when is he 22, 23, I want to say?
Something like that.
Like, he's not old, right? As you said, he hasn't
played. Not one of the pacers that Sri Lankans were getting excited about in the years gone by. He wasn't. Yeah. There was Lahiru Kumara, there was Chamira, there was Rajitha, all those guys.
Yeah.
Madushankar was not one of those names.
No, so I like how good he is in the power play. I still want to see him continue to develop out of that. But I think he's been absolutely fantastic. Someone asked me a question on the other show about whether Mohammad Shami and him should, like if they swap places, what kind of impact would each player have and all that sort of stuff. And it's a really interesting one because strike bowlers generally strike in a vacuum. Does that make sense? So I've always thought it's very hard to be a defensive bowler if the guy at the other end is going at 15 runs and over, right?
Right.
But if you're Waqar Yunus or Shoaib Akhtar or Mitchell Stark or Mohammad Shami or, you know, those sorts of bowlers, you're just bowling your best ball anyway, and it can get through people at any stage. But having said that, it would be fascinating to see what Madushankar would have been able to do with a bowler at the other end who could put pressure on. Right? Like, whether that would have helped as well. And even though he's taken a lot of wickets, I wouldn't say he's striking the same way that, like, Mohammad Shami is or someone else in this particular tournament. So,
of course,
he's been fantastic. Yeah. I think, you know, the thing is, I was kind of fascinated about him early on. So we mentioned him in the first few shows. Hmm. Now we have to mention him every game because they don't have another bowler, man.
That's true. I think he's been mentioned on every single Uncovered World Cup podcast. He has to be, because even prior to the World Cup, in the Asia Cup, he did well. Yeah. And he bowled an absolute seed to Rohit Sharma. That was one of the contenders, I guess, for ball of the tournament thus far. And then also, you know, just the fact that he's super young, and I'm a sucker for left-arm pace anyway. But anyway, moving on, and before we go to a break, not much again to talk about Bangladesh either, but Mahmudullah, he's been pretty much the only batter who's looked in form. He scored a 50 versus Pakistan as well. And it's just that Bangladeshi top order, they haven't been consistent at all. Every game, barring this one, they find themselves at like 5 down or 6 down for not so many. That's really let them down, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's weird. It's kind of like a double failure. You know, the older players and the younger players failed. And I know they don't have Tamim, and I do think that is, they came in with a mix of youth and experience and then lost a lot of the experience straight away, especially at the top of the order. Mahmudullah likes to bat down the order. You know, Shakib was down the order. Mushfiqib was down the order. But they really backed those, you know, the Shanto, the Ridoys, and those sorts of players. And they just didn't come up, right? And
yeah,
their bowling has been... I still don't know how they took so many wickets in the previous cycle watching them in this World Cup. But they had a brilliant record. They took a lot of wickets, and they've all come here and they've all not taken any wickets. So perhaps Bangladesh's bowling is the England batting of this tournament. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where you just have a situation where they thought they had it right when they got here and it didn't work. And we always look like there'll be, you know, commissions back home and someone will get sacked and all the sorts of normal things that happen when you play this bad in a World Cup, especially when we're expected to do okay. That said, the one thing you can't legislate for is form, right? And, you know, you might have said it's a push to think all these young batters will do well, but our older guys will help. And then only one older guy helps and the other older guy's not even in the side and suddenly you're in all sorts of trouble. But essentially, if they had bowled better at times in this tournament, I still think they might have stolen another game. I'm trying to remember. I think I had them as four wins. Maybe
their top end. So that was their high. I think that was the upper limit for you.
So they've won two games. They've been terrible, but
yeah,
they're not going home with zero wins. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't want to say they haven't been bad because I think they've probably been worse than England, all things considered. Mm. But they have won two games. I don't know. It's very weird.
Yeah, and they still have a shot at qualifying for the Champions Trophy, of course, because after winning today, that's very much on the cards. And I think one thing that you really hit the nail on the head with was the fact that they've continued to rotate their bowlers. You know, you haven't seen a steady bowling attack from Bangladesh, and the one older guy who's performing looks pretty old, doesn't he? Mahmudullah did not age well. Man looks 50 already, but he does not look 50 at all with the bat. He's been in really good form. But yeah, very, very disappointing stuff from Bangladesh. The World Cup is still alive. We'll be talking all about it after this break. You're watching Uncovered with Jared.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to Uncovered. You're with Jared and Behram, and we've got Rohit Gupta and Orville in the comments. Hi, hello everyone in the comments and whoever's watching, and thanks for following this channel. Also, follow Jared's other channel in which you can get more cool videos. You know, there's one recently out on Shami, there's one on Jadeja, there's one on India. So all of you Indian fans, definitely get going over there after this one.
Yeah, but anyway, I apologize. Like, I've given like three Indian videos in a row, but I always get a bit obsessed with teams who are playing really good. But like, I think the next three videos are not on India. So like, all these new people who've joined the channel are going to be like, wait, he doesn't make one about India every day?
Yeah, well, I mean, they've just played so well that they deserve that, I suppose. But anyway, the World Cup is still alive. And we thought that we might have like 19 dead rubbers and the semi-finalists might be locked in. But New Zealand have lost four games on the bounce. And whilst Afghanistan always had an opportunity to qualify for the semis, had if they still go on to win their two games, Pakistan is in with a shout. And it's crazy how rain has come to their aid once again, coughs in 92. And even in the 2022 T20 World Cup, South Africa versus Zimbabwe got washed out. We all talk about the Netherlands game. We don't talk about that one. So rain has favored Pakistan before. And look, they were 200 in 25 overs. Mm. They were chasing 400. Fakhar Zaman was hitting them to all parts. And I just want to know, do you think Pakistan could have chased 400 in theory?
Yes, but I think even from where they were, I think they were still outsiders, right? I think the crick info predictor had them at like 15% chance or 14% chance from that position. I probably would have thought they were maybe a 30% chance, 25% chance. Mm. It's just because it's so many runs, right? Like, you know, at a certain point, you lose a wicket, then, you know, you have a run out straight after and it just gets really, really tough. You only need one good spell as well. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All these things can go against you. That's why it's so hard to chase really big totals. Plus, it's harder to chase at the World Cup than anywhere else. Having said that, Pakistan had already broken that record earlier in the tournament. But yeah. I think if it's a full 50-over game, I'd be pretty confident to say that New Zealand would have won that. But it wasn't. And there's not much New Zealand or Pakistan can do about that, right? Like, Pakistan played it perfectly considering what they had to do. And all on Babar Azam for having a strike rate of 85 at one stage or whatever it was.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I listened to what Babar and Fakhar had to say. And they said that the first, in the first 10 overs or so, there was no cloud cover. They were not feeling the rain would come into play. But then towards the 13th, 14th over, they saw that. And then they asked the dressing room what all of those, you know, scores were at each over mark and how they needed to pace it. So maybe, I just want to think, maybe this is wishful thinking, that maybe Babar was thinking that if we lose a wicket, that score is going to go higher. Yeah. So maybe I'll consolidate and Fakhar can hit out. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned how, you know, if it was a 50 over game, New Zealand would have probably won it because all it takes is a wicket. And at that point, all it probably would have taken was Fakhar's wicket.
Exactly.
But I think when they were tasked with chasing 342 and 41 overs, I think Pakistan was favorite at that point too.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. Well, once it wasn't 50 overs, it just, I know it's a silly, it's just a long time to bat and things can go wrong. The minute you make it a little bit shorter, I think they're certainly, and I'm not having a go at Pakistan either. I think they deserve to be You know, if you go that hard that early and get yourself into that position. And I know there was a lot of confusion about the fact that they win at 7.8 runs and over, and they won a game where you had to chase at 8 runs and over. But that's why the, and there are some flaws with Duckworth Lewis, but that is the whole idea, is that they had resources in hand if they wanted to go nuts at the end. But yeah, I mean, for the tournament, it was probably better, right? That happened. And, you know, I think the ICC got the black eye a little bit already with, if you have to play three quarters of a tournament to get rid of two of your 10 teams, people kind of already, at that point, people are like, wait a minute, Bangladesh and England could still qualify? Like, how? Right? So I think I wanted the ICC to be really aware that they'd made another error. And to be honest, they were, from what I heard. And then they got saved, and Fucker was incredible in that. In the same way as you said, the Shaki thing, you know, having a moment in a dead rubber that lifts it up, and the Champions Trophy as well. Like, I don't give a crap about the Champions Trophy, but the way that Bangladesh batted today for their net run rate, clearly they really desperate to get involved in that tournament.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And speaking of Fakhar, once again, I mean, he's back to Player of the Match awards on the bounce. And after scoring 81 in his comeback game versus Bangladesh, he scored 126 off what, 81 deliveries versus New Zealand at a strike rate of 155 plus, which is insane. And that's exactly what Pakistan was missing, right? Like, you need that dynamism up top. You need someone who can go hard in the power play. And when he's on song, he really makes Pakistan look like a different team altogether. Like 18 sixes in three innings. That's crazy, because the top six hitters are at 20. I think Rohit Sharma and David Warner, and he's just two below them, and he's played so many less games.
Yeah, look, I think he's a Clydesdale. The rest of the team are Clydesdales, right? And he's a stallion. And that's why I think when you have a player like that, you know what a Clydesdale is, yeah?
I don't, actually.
Clydesdales are those really big, thick horses with the big hooves that they're more muscular, but they move a lot slower. And that's what the Pakistan batting order is. It's that. Whereas he's a stallion who could absolutely sprint. And so you forgive a player like that for that kind of thing. And I think it's absolutely fair. Just a quick one. Aman has just put a comment up saying, if Nathan Lyon would have been a little slower coming out to bat at Lord's, which he wouldn't have been because he knew about this law and that's why he was out there in the first place, Aman, would everyone have been happy with England timing out Lyon? Would everyone? No. Would I? Yes. Because that is that. If he can't walk out into the middle to bat on time, then he shouldn't be out in the middle. That is how the game is played. We actually do need to move it forward at a certain point. And if you were too injured to get out to the middle, I don't want someone being wheeled out there. What are we even talking about? And there were plenty of us. If you go back, you'll be able to see my tweets from the time. I literally said, this is great from Australia because they've taken this. They've actually thought about this and made sure that it can't be an issue here. And, you know, those sorts of things should happen going ahead. But anyway.
I mean, Nathan Lyon would never want to just stand around in the long room just for no reason, right? I mean,
no one would.
That's not a very happy place to stand around. But yeah, just talking about Pakistan's top three, you know, Abdullah Shafiq has been amongst the runs. He scored 68 versus Bangladesh as well. Failed versus New Zealand, but he's had a pretty good tournament. And Babar finally got some runs, and he even accelerated in that post-train period. He got an unbeaten 66. All of a sudden, it seems like Pakistan has a top three again. And that was the, you know, hallmark of their success in the previous cycle. So surely they can defeat England, right? I mean, everyone has at this point.
I thought England played well against Australia. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were better than before. I'm happy that, you know, they finally got a couple of 50s. I mean, they hadn't got any in two games, and Stokes looked good till he was out there. Milan was also decent. But yeah, I just felt like they lacked that killer instinct to just, actually not killer instinct. Maybe that's what they were going for. They probably lacked that patience to just take it deep a bit and then go a bit ballistic, because they were all holding out to Adam Zampa. And if there's one lesson that we've learned from this World Cup, is that you probably are better off not trying to attack Adam Zampa.
I think if I was Pakistan right now, I would be, even if I was Australia, I think going into that game, I'd be like, this is not the time I want to play England. When they're thinking about the Champions Trophy and there's no pressure on them anymore, they might as well just come out and play. As I said, I thought they bowled quite well against Australia. They got early wickets. Their bowling was fine. Their batting obviously was the issue, as you said, but which has been the bigger case throughout the entire tournament, right? But yeah, I think if I was Pakistan, I'd be like, don't know if this is exactly when I want to play England. There's also that thing of, do you remember, there was a couple of years ago when Mumbai Indians were on the bottom of the IPL for like ages, and they had a really good team. And And I remember I kept saying, I think this is going to have to turn because it doesn't make sense that they're playing this bad. That's how I would feel if I was Pakistan going up against England. I'd be like, it has to turn. It almost kind of turned last game. If it turns down, this is really, really nasty. But look, I don't think Pakistan's that good either. Like, it's not like I'm sitting here thinking that Pakistan is great as well. So if you don't beat England, you probably don't deserve to make the semifinals.
Oh, yeah. I would even argue that they probably don't deserve to make the semifinal as is. They're probably just going to make it because other teams aren't playing as well. But look,
I think Pakistan, that kind of, don't you think that, like, it's a weird one. So I've got all these friends back home who keep saying, oh, you know, Australia's rubbish, Australia's rubbish. I said, outside of India, can you tell me a team that you think is really well-rounded? Right? The truth is that we have one fantastic team. We have England, Australia, Pakistan, New Zealand. And I suppose you'd throw Afghanistan in at the moment, who all have strengths, but clearly all have, you know, weaknesses at different levels as well, right? And England's not even in that conversation anymore because they took themselves out of it so early on. You could have put Sri Lanka in there too if they'd ever turned up with a full bowling attack. You could have put Bangladesh in there. There's a lot of teams that had interesting cases to be able to make it through to the semifinals. And realistically, India have played really well and everyone else has looked pretty shoddy at times.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting because Pakistan is alive in this World Cup in the most Pakistan fashion possible. Like, it does not, like, we have this term which Saqlain Mushtaq used in a press conference, which has become like viral now, called Kudrat Ka Nizam. It means Mother Nature's way or something like that. It's crazy at this point. Like, the rain coming at the exact perfect time.
I worry, the match getting washed out. I worry about that because I think there are people in Pakistan cricket that kind of believe that more than they should. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
and
for sure.
And look, I get it because how can you look at Pakistan's history and not think that there is like the whole Baz Dalida thing when he gets hit in the head and then that ends up, you know, with Pakistan being in a position where they can qualify for the World Cup. I get it. But at the same time, how about you prepare your cricket team better?
Absolutely.
And not like literally that you said, oh, they've got a great top three at the moment. You're right. But the opening position has been a shambles the way they have handled this situation. They should have just kept Fucker in the side to begin with. And they've lucked on to the two best openers by being so reactionary. Anyway, but look, they can still make it.
It's interesting because, I mean, Fakhar averages 45 plus and strikes at 90 plus in ODI cricket, which makes him very unique. So there is a solid case over there, but I think he might have been injured for a bit in between. Might have rested too long, though.
I think he was injured after he was dropped, and I think he was fit before he was picked again. That's what I'm hearing. I don't know what you're hearing, but that's what I heard.
Yeah, I mean, everything is quite suspect, I suppose, with respect to injuries and everything. But here's an interesting one. Pakistan play England in Kolkata. And in the freak incident where they do qualify for the semis, they'll play India in Kolkata. And Kolkata is the venue where Pakistan seamers got the ball to reverse versus Bangladesh. Waseem Junior in particular, he's taken 8 wickets in 3 games. He's been absolutely phenomenal coming off the bench. And this is the guy you didn't give any game time to because you kept playing your front three top fast bowlers in games that really didn't matter, like Nepal and the Asia Cup game versus Bangladesh. And, you know, Shaheen and Rauf went for quite a lot versus New Zealand, but they were good versus Bangladesh. So the Kolkata aspect of this and how Pakistan could get reversed, because we've seen a fair bit of reverse actually in this tournament, more than we thought we would in modern day ODI cricket with 2 new balls. I think this might play into Pakistan's advantage, but that might also just be wishful thinking at this point, you know? I don't know.
I think Muhammad Wasim's a good bowler, and he's one of those people I don't quite understand. Like, I looked at Hassan Ali's record. So Hassan Ali, I meant to send you this, but I haven't sent you this. You like this. He has the highest economy rate in the history of power plays in one day cricket. Now, worth saying that's only since the year 2000, but there's no one before the year 2000 who would have been more than him. And obviously it would be a modern bowler. But you do look through it and you go, there's something not quite there. Look, I think it's really, you know, they could beat England. I don't think they need the reverse swing or anything to beat England in that situation. If they beat England, though, and they get reverse swing, they'll also play India, won't they? Because there'll be 1 versus 4 probably, which they'll also be in Eden Gardens, in which they will have reverse swing again. It would be hilarious if that all fell together for them because they do not deserve it at all. And you know, but as I said, I'm not sure I feel many of the other teams deserve it either. It's, you know, like Australia's, you know, the way they, the first 2.5 games that they played, New Zealand now losing. I thought New Zealand were good in their first two losses, but they've lost since then as well. And then, South Africa were pathetic, right? Like, so who are we making a case for here? South Africa, were they bat first? I don't.
Yeah, the third best team is South Africa when they bat first. I think that is apt. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to, I don't know, jinx it or talk them up or anything, because I don't think they're good enough to make it to the semis. But hey, if they make it, then you can't say that they didn't deserve it because they made it to the semis. And if they do somehow make it to the semis this way, then they will not be a side that many would want to face, unless you're India, because India could beat anybody.
Just on the comments, a couple of people have said one versus four is in Mumbai, not in guns. It is.
Yeah, so not Pakistan. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Pakistan qualify. It's actually one versus four is in Eden Gardens. That's why we. Yes. We should have explained that better, because we're both thinking one step ahead, because we already know that. But yeah, that's why. So it could be very funny, or not funny, but it could be very interesting for Pakistan if they become a Kolkata specialist and they end up moving the final there. But they, as I said, let's not get ahead of ourselves. They could get absolutely smashed around the face by England. I don't think they're a very good team. I don't think England's a very good team, but hey.
Mm-hmm. Also, conventional wisdom suggests that New Zealand will defeat Sri Lanka, so this shouldn't even get to that point. But there's a rain forecast over there. So I don't know, fingers crossed. Who's to say? If rain has saved Pakistan once, it could save it twice, thrice, four times. Who's to say? But anyway, Shailendra Sahu has a super chat, so we can take that before we go on.
Which you want me to find. That's why you've said it.
Yes, it's you have to scroll a bit. Okay, I believe Shakib was right. Unfair criticism. I mean, there are layers to this. Shakib is not one that a lot of people empathize with. But I don't see something criminal in appealing. I'm also fine with that.
Yeah, I think that it happens so often. I think this is a weird situation to do it in. I'm not talking about the helmet stuff, but more the it wasn't that long a delay. I have seen really, I've seen players, even when they're not time-wasting, but just dawdle to get out to the middle. And I thought to myself, I would just appeal just to teach them a lesson here, right? The game needs to move on, mate. I just think Shakib was ticking. I don't think I blame Matthews, Shakib, Erasmus. What's the guy's name? Holdstock, the fourth umpire, the third umpire. I think this is just a thing that happened. And it was within the laws, and I can understand why it will upset a lot of people. I personally, obviously, don't really care all that much about it. I think maybe the gray area of the law needs to be looked at, just because of that whole, you know, ready to receive a ball and everything. But Shakib is within his rights to be able to call for this. You know, other captains have done it before, right? It's not the first one. Do we just quickly to go through the stories? Obviously, Vasbert Drakes was on the on a plane, so he could do his. But there was also the Indian guy, Hemilal Yadav, I think his name was, who was in a conversation and just never tried to walk out onto the ground. And to get back to that, one of the comments we had before, we actually had a guy called, I want to say, AJ Harris, who was, he had an injured groin, and it took him so long to get to the middle. The opposition was just like, they just appealed and got rid of him because they were bored. So look, teams have done this before. I would say that it's a bit, the one reason I like the Bill Brown man cat story, right, is that Bill Brown admitted he was getting an advantage and that he did it twice in a row. There's no arguing that Bill Brown was doing something. Whereas if you have another man cad where the first time there was a famous man cad and a guy has just accidentally moved a millimeter past the thing, everyone would go, oh, I would prefer the first international timed out to be a batter who had done something a bit more egregious other than the fact that he didn't tell the umpire that his helmet had broken. And that's why, you know, I'd like it to be, it took him 4 minutes to get out in the middle. And then when he got out in the middle, he said he had the wrong box or something. Or do you know what I mean? That,
yeah,
I would only put that there. But anyway, you wanted to go to an ad.
I mean,
and now.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go to the ad, but I just want to add before that, nice. I mean, might as well check your kit entirely before walking out over there, right? Like, that's also due diligence on the batter. And I just feel like, of course, this is definitely one of those things that will polarize opinion. It will infuriate many, but not shaking the hands of the opposition. I don't know how I feel.
I think these teams have just got, you know, they've got beef, man. They've got beef.
Yeah, they've got major beef. And on that note, we'll take a break. You're watching Uncovered with Jared and Bahram. And yeah, we'll be back with other teams shortly.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports.
Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Welcome back to Uncovered. You're with Bahram and Jared, and a hilarious comment by Alexander Plate. But what if the kids start doing this? I love that. That made me chuckle for sure. All right.
Think of the children. Isn't that the Simpsons meme? Won't someone think of the children?
I think that might be the Simpsons meme. But I also heard a lot of this, you know, when the Munkud was happening.
English media. Besto said it recently. I think that's what the Alexander's joke's about.
Yeah, of course. Well, we all love ourselves some Johnny Besto and some stumpings off paces. But anyway, let's talk about New Zealand. And well, it's interesting, Jared. I've been obviously covering this entire World Cup with you. And prior to the World Cup, you were not feeling great about New Zealand. Mm. They had a great start. They won four in a row, but now they've lost four on the bounce. And they also have a lot of injuries. Matt Henry is gone. Lockie Ferguson hasn't played in a bit. And Jimmy Neesham copped a blow to the thumb or something as well, which, you know, handicapped them, particularly in that previous game versus South Africa, but also versus Pakistan. They weren't fielding their best possible 11, and these injuries could not have come at a worst possible time for New Zealand, could they?
No, I wasn't high on them, and some of those things have sort of come out, you know, the fifth bowler thing, and I mean, certainly got smashed against Faka the other day, didn't he? Ratchan Ravindra has gone for a lot of runs as well. So some of the things I said have played out, but Santner and Lockie overcame, you know, beat finding their form so brilliantly, and obviously no one expected Ravindra to be in the situation he's done. So they're a weird team to work out, because there have been times where I think my first power list, I wanted to have them at three, and I might have ended up putting them at two. My second power list, I put them at two, and then straight afterwards they sort of fell apart. And so I don't know really where we're going with them, but I think if they don't have Lockie Ferguson and Matt Henry, I don't know if they can get enough early wickets or put pressure on enough early at the start, and then also have that second ball because they don't have another strong spinner.
Yeah.
So I think that there is certainly a case to be said that they have an issue there. But they're such a resilient team. And, you know, I talk about this all the time, the whole problem solving thing. That's what New Zealand cricket does, right? And so within that, I can certainly see how they'll just find a way to make it work, even though it shouldn't.
And they'll always remain relevant, I feel. You'll never have an era where New Zealand cricket is just not doing as well as they've done in the last three decades or something. Ever since they had Hadley, I think after that, they've always been a decent side. But now in particular, though, they're really, really good in recent.
I think
they made that face.
Well, I think they had one bad period. But I think they had a bad period in the early 90s when Danny Morrison tells a story of like virtually not winning a test match. But no, you're right. Since 1979, or you could even go back to 75 perhaps, they've been a really good team considering everything. And I suppose the best way is they just find a way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've got Dave Steenvoorden.
Sorry if
I butchered your name over there in the comments. Prateek Jha is over here, my favorite Prateek. Hi to you as well. And I want to talk about Ratchan Ravindra. Of course, he's slammed 300s in this World Cup already. He wasn't even batting in New Zealand's top order prior to the tournament. He had played 8 ODI innings prior to the tournament, which makes this even more ridiculous. And the fact that his hundreds have come against Australia, England and Pakistan, three big teams, you know. Unfortunately, he's ended up on the losing side in two of those games. But those are pretty big hundreds. And I I've been fanboying over Gerald Coetzee and Marco Jansen, and I was like, torn between those two guys as to who was the brightest breakout star in this World Cup. I'd have to say Ratchan takes the cake at this point.
I just think it's been incredible. We've never seen a player like do what he's done in a World Cup before. And you would expect that to be like a young Virat Kohli or a young Michael Clarke, or do you know what I mean? Someone we'd heard about for a couple of years coming in, right? We haven't really heard about him. And it's not like the way he was explained to me when I talked to people in New Zealand cricket, which I think was when he made his test debut, they were like, look, he could be a pretty handy opener eventually one day. And, you know, his finger spin's not too bad. He's a good athlete. No one ever said, do you know what? Ratan Ravindra might be one of the best one day players in the world. And he might not be. This could be it, right? We have seen players, you know, we have literally, you know, we talked about Madushankar before. And it's the first time I haven't brought up Jeff Allett when talking about Madushankar. But Jeff Allett, leading wicket taker in the 1999 World Cup, literally did nothing his entire career outside of that, right? Yeah, but there was a difference. Jeff Allett was 28, 29-year-old. Gary Gilmore did a similar thing for Australia. It's a big difference between that and what is going on here, right? Which is a young player who's taken a leap. And the truth is that we can't really tell, you know, like I've started to deal a lot with, you know, cricket scouts and stuff over the last few years. It's not something I do myself, but sometimes I do dabble in it a little bit. But, you know, I listen to a lot of the basketball, the basketball thing. And the Joker, you know, don't want to bring up the Nuggets in every podcast, but I will. someone who was, Giannis. Giannis and the Joker are two, they're both MVPs in the NBA. Giannis was taken at, I don't know, 11th or 14th spot. And Milwaukee took him and like admitted later that they just sort of did it on a whim. They didn't, they thought he might be good, right? They didn't think he'd go on to be one of the best players in the world. And Denver took Joker in the second round, so about the 38th pick or something like that. And again, they thought he'd be good, but no one expected him to become this. And it doesn't happen all that often, right? But occasionally you do have, and Mike Hussey is a really good example of that, right? Of a player who just when they work, when they develop in a different learning curve than other players do, right? And in the case of everyone we've just said there, they all had certain skills, but there are other things that we hadn't factored into their game yet, but because they hadn't developed them at that point. So how could you factor in that Ratan Ravindra was going to be able to do this when in domestic one-day cricket in New Zealand, he hadn't done this, right? Like, we're not wrong, right? Compare, actually, let's go back. Comparing to Devon Conway is a really good example. From a very early age, I heard about Devon Conway. People were always saying to me, Devon Conway, you've got to wait for this guy, Devon Conway. And then, you know, the next thing I hear about him, I've got South Africans saying to me, this Devon Conway's making runs in New Zealand. So by that point, you know, I've gone like, well, Devon Conway's not going to work. Ratan Ravindra seems a very different kind of player where everyone was like, yeah, he's a handy player. He'll be okay. He'll be okay. Yeah. He maybe fringe international player. You can play him in Asia and he's a good athlete. Maybe he plays a little bit of one day cricket. He suddenly looks like the missing link, right?
He's definitely looked like an upgrade on Kane Williamson up until Kane came back himself. And we'll talk about that as well. But I just think that it's remarkable how Ratan has just flourished when thrown in the deep end. It can't get harder than that. You're batting in the top order in a World Cup for a team that's done really well in World Cups. So there are some level of expectations over there. But anyway, because we're a little short on time, I do really want to talk about Kane as well. It didn't really seem like he was injured ever. And this is interesting because he recovered from an ACL injury in record time. Then in his return game, he broke his thumb whilst batting off. Like he crossed 50. He retired hurt on 78. And then he comes back versus Pakistan. That's out of his skin. That's a pretty brisk 95 he scores over there. Takes that Afridi 2009-esque catch with a broken thumb. And I'm like, how does he do this? Like, what is up with Kane Williamson? And how amazing is this that he's had this sort of return?
Yeah, I mean, someone sent me a message the other day, said that he's like Wolverine. His body just seems to recover quicker than other people's. I didn't think he should have recovered from the knee. And I certainly, when I think that morning, I think I got up. And then had a look at, I think the toss had just happened. And I looked at the scorecard and I thought I'd misread it. I was like, wait, he's back already. Like, he just does seem to have incredible healing capabilities. But look, as you said, also the innings was great, right? Like, the ability to just go out there and smash the ball everywhere, you know, is just an absolute remarkable act to be able to come back. But he is, you know, that level of player, I suppose.
Yeah, he's definitely at that stature. And I guess it's time to talk about the hot favorites to win the cup. India, they bowled Sri Lanka out for 55. They bowled South Africa out for 83. Shami took another fifer. We made an entire video on him. There's a podcast, Footmarks. You can go check that out. And then also Jadeja scored valuable runs in both games that India played this week and took a fifer versus South Africa. Looked great while doing it. And Siraj got wickets. Bumrah and Kuldeep are fantastic anyway. This is the best bowling attack India have ever assembled in ODI cricket, in my books. What about yours?
So they took a I think they took all but three wickets available to them in the 1983 World Cup when they won. Mm. But clearly, yeah. there's no one who's seen both of those attacks is comparing the two attacks. Like
they comparing Roger Binney to Mohammad Shami.
I mean, yeah, Maitland Niall is not Jasprit Bumrah. I'm just going to put it out. Yeah. But even the spinners weren't as good, I don't think. I'm trying to remember who their spin attack was. But yeah, so 2003, they took a lot of wickets as well, I want to say. So the years have been good because they're a pretty consistent batting lineup, right? Like I'm not saying every World Cup they've had their failures, you know, same 79 World Cup and everything, but they're a pretty consistent batting lineup. So when they get their bowling right, they should be a semi-finalist, right? At the very least, they should be right up there. But yeah, this is off the charts. The only bowling team that's ever been better than this on terms of average is the 2003 Australian lineup, which is also remarkable considering they didn't have Gillespie and Warne, that team. I think their bowling's been great. A lot of people are getting angry at you keep saying good things about India. I'm like, what do you want me to say? Literally, other than talking about the number eight position, which to be fair, I have a lot as well.
Yeah.
They're so good. Would you make an argument that their top six spinners, right, would get into any other side in this tournament?
Most sides. I would say most.
The only side would be Sri Lanka.
The eighth best spinner. Yeah. The eighth best spinner would probably start for Pakistan.
So, the 15th best spinner would start for Pakistan. But, if you think about it, let's say it's, I don't know, Chahal or Bishnoi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chahal and Bishnoi plays for most teams. And so, you know, maybe Australia don't want a second spinner, so they don't take, and they like Zampa because he's been doing so well, right? Maybe.
There was even that guy, Rahul Chahar. I don't know where he went, but I liked him as well. The cornrows guy.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I don't reckon. Well, you're right. Looking at some of this World Cup, he probably would have got a game for some teams. But I think he's probably a better T20 bowler. But the point there is you're picking an obscure name from the IPL outright, and you're still right. Like,
a full strength
Sri Lanka, Hasselranga and Tikshana, maybe they get in ahead. And Afghanistan, if you knew what Nabi was going to do, perhaps not. But I still think that you'd find a couple of Indian spinners you'd probably prefer to Mujeeb, right? Like, Washington Sundar would fit into most things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a ridiculous situation that they are in, that they have that kind of depth available to them in so many different ways, right? And the backup batters as well, right? Like, I mean, you could have, if let's say this was an India that played like England, they could actually restock with a bunch of young players if they wanted to and give it a go almost straight away. Whereas England's like, do we bring in Phil Salt? Like it's not the same, right? The levels of depth, the ability to, change things around. So Alexander just said, would Australia pick Agar over Zampa if the former was fit? No, they weren't planning on playing him anyway, Agar. So they weren't even worried about him not being available. I just think it's remarkable. And I think that, and I get this, there's a lot of Indian fans waiting for the deflation, right? They should be, because they haven't lost a game. And I would feel uncomfortable about that. And I can tell you why. I traveled all the way to the 2003 World Cup, right? And we were petrified that we would lose the semi or the final because we hadn't lost the game. And we couldn't get it out of our heads up until the point that Ricky Ponting get banging balls off the Wanderers, right? even when Sehwag was hitting, even when India had lost their wickets, we were still like, shit, this could still happen, right? And so I get that instinct. But it's hard, if you're asking me as an analyst to look at this, it's like, what do you want me to point to, everyone? So there was an angry fan the other day who was saying to me, well, you're saying that they're the greatest bowling, greatest batting lineup, one of the greatest batting lineups of all time. But you haven't understood that, you know, there's more runs scored now than there ever has been before and everything else. And I said, yeah, but I'm talking about average. Like literally other teams could have averaged really high and one team has averaged more. And that's the 2007 Australian team. And there's like three teams who've averaged less with the ball, four teams have averaged less with the ball. I haven't looked up the numbers since the South Africa game. It's like the 2003/2007 Australian teams is probably the best one day team we might ever see combined, especially over two World Cups. And they won away from home, all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, India is in, slightly behind, but maybe like if that's tier A, they're like, or if that's tier one, they're tier 1B, right, to that. And mm-hmm. then there's a big gap between them and everyone else.
Yeah, daylight, absolute daylight. And it's funny how Prateek Jha has brought up Rahul Sharma, the lost IPL leggy. We did a video on him as well. I can't remember which Footmarks pod this was, but Rahul Sharma came up and we talked about him at length. Virat Kohli,
are you talking after about falling Rahul short, Sharma, was he yeah. not the one who, was he not the one that had the, when he was a kid, he had an illness? No, he had something with his eye because he was sick. I thought you were talking about the other Rahul, the one who plays for Mumbai, who bowls through the crease.
No, I was talking about the guy who had a stellar IPL back in 2013 or 14.
Oh, you were talking about him. Okay, yeah. No, someone's saying in the thing, he got done for drugs. That's why he disappeared.
There you have it. I was talking about...
Yeah, I do think he'd struggle. But the point is, there's lots of other... You know, you could pull out a random Indian spinner at the moment, and I really think they'd have a chance of playing for vast majority of a lot of these teams.
Yeah. And of course, we cannot do this podcast without talking about Virat Kohli. He fell short by 12 runs versus Sri Lanka, but now he has leveled Sachin's ODI 100 record, slammed his 49th 100 versus South Africa. And, you know, out of all the batters that have played this format, is Kohli the greatest? Because I don't know, I feel like he is at this point. There's a conversation with Viv over there, right? Because Viv was way ahead of his time. But I just feel like Kohli is the undisputed GOAT because he's got the numbers, he's got the wins, he's once again India's main man with the bat in this World Cup. And that's after a torrid run of like 3 years without 100. So that speaks volumes.
Oh, look, I think he's fantastic. Viv Richards averaged like a bunch more than anyone ever had in that era for a long time and struck at a rate that would still be considered good now, right?
Yeah.
So I would find it very hard to move off Viv for that reason. AB de Villiers, Kohli's gone past him just because I think he's played more cricket, even though I think AB de Villiers is a more efficient, more interesting ODI player. Jos Buttler, probably not going to be able to get into that conversation. He could have been an interesting bolter in the same way that AB was. Sachin, I still think, if we did a real comparison, I still think Sachin was probably a better player than Virat Kohli. So I probably... Mm-hmm. So I suppose what you would say is, this is just off the top of my head, and like I'd have to go through the numbers deeply, as you would know, but you could certainly make a case for him to be the best ODI batter of all time. And I would think off the top of my head, maybe the lowest you would have him is third at the moment. And I think those are both fair statements, just depending on, and also it depends on what you like and everything else. I like the fact that, you know, Viv was had a strike rate of about 20 higher than the rest of cricket. And still with a high average. But, you know, very different eras and everything else. And Sachin also was, he was absolutely incredible. I think if you look at the 100 numbers, you would think that Virat is a better player than Sachin. But remember that Sachin was going really, really hard early on and risking his wicket and still averaging the numbers that he did, right? So you've got to, I think you've got to put all those things in. But yeah, at best, first, at worst, three. That's off the top of my head, unless I'm forgetting someone else. But I think that's about right.
That more or less makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I would just think of it, you know, Sachin probably played a harder era with respect to, you know, more difficult bowlers. But then Kohli now doesn't have it as easy as it was in, let's say, the early 2010s. It's not, you know, completely a batter's game at this point because sometimes the bowlers just completely blow you over. And, you know, the pace playing pandemic and all of that stuff, it adds more, you know.
Yeah, the reinforcing
needs to that conversation.
I think you'd have to go pretty deep. I think that the one thing you would notice is if you're just looking at sheer volume of runs, that Virat Kohli definitely sticks out. He's got the second best batting average of all time and probably the most of anyone over 5,000 runs because Shubman Gill wouldn't be up there, would he? So, I think if you look at sheer volume, you know, an average, then he looks better than Tendulkar. But if you factor in strike rate compared to era, I think Tendulkar probably goes back to the front. But then once you do that, that's when Viv looks absolutely incredible. If you've ever looked, I did a graph once, which is players with, I think it's over 5,000 ODI runs and their strike rate compared to the era. And so you've got these little outliers who are just like a little bit ahead. And then you've got a couple like Maxwell and Buttler and me, who are like further ahead. But Viv is like an inch and a half on top of anyone else from his era. Like you really notice the difference.
It's interesting. I never thought of the whole Sachin strike rate thing ever before. So I'm going to actually nerd out on this after this podcast. But two batters who also scored runs for India and haven't been in the best of touch were, well, Shubman Gill. He scored 92 versus Sri Lanka. And then Shreyas Iyer, you know, he scored back-to-back 50s, big 50s in these two last games. And at this point, you know, they've lost Hardik Pandya. We know that he will play no further part in this World Cup. Do you think that will impact this team at all? Because sure, your tail is now longer because you're going to play all three of Shami, Siraj, Bumrah, but the opportunity cost is more wickets. So I don't think that they're literally, I think they're still good to win the World Cup.
So I've been talking about a lot about the Evan Goldbus effect of not having someone at number eight you trust and your batters bat slower. Someone pointed out on Twitter that I was right and Virat has batted slower without someone at number eight. So they've already adjusted to that a little bit. And because they're getting extra wickets, kind of, I'm not the end of the world. I just think without Hardik, they have less flexibility. You know, with Hardik and Jadeja in the side, they could do anything, right? They can play seven bowlers if they want, or they can play with Jadeja batting at number eight, right? Like, you know, they have such flexibility within that side. They've lost some of that. As it currently stands, it doesn't look like they're going to need flexibility. So, I think it's a problem, but I'm not sure it is actually going to be a problem.
Yeah, I don't think it's like detrimental to the point that it's going to cost them the World Cup. But yeah, of course, you'd love to have Hardik Pandya in your team. Who wouldn't? He walks into any team. South Africa. Now let's talk about them. They imploded versus India, but then they won big versus New Zealand. They are also one of the reasons why this tournament is still alive in a weird way. And Quinton de Kock is now Quadton de Kock because he has four World Cup hundreds. And do you think he'll be able to live up to his name?
look, I think he's been fantastic. It's really interesting to me that he does seem to go through these periods where he just can't miss time a ball. I think he's improved his one-day batting quite a bit. I think he got a little bit obsessed with flipping the ball over his shoulder for a little while there. And I think teams bowling spin to him got in his head a little bit, like from an ego point of view. He's always been such a natural striker of the ball. And he's a fast scorer in a way that some other players aren't. There are players who are fast scorers because they force themselves to be fast scorers. Whereas the players who score fast in Test cricket are the ones who just score fast. Do you know what I mean? Like that's just what they do. Right. Like they're not doing it because they think it's right. They're just doing it. And I think he was like that. And I think at times earlier in his career, that bowling of the off spinner at him or the medium paces and all that sort of stuff he doesn't like got in his head. I don't think it does anymore. I think he's a slightly better player. And I think we're just seeing peak QDK, right? And I think he's been fantastic.
Yeah. And it's interesting. He's going to retire after this World Cup. So could go out with a bang and not a joke, hopefully, not a joke. And South Africa versus New Zealand were outstanding. Not just Quinton, but Rassie van der Dusen also scored 100. He goes under the radar very frequently. I think he's probably the most underrated number three in world cricket because he's got the numbers and he has the different gears. At the start, he'll not go as hard. And then towards the end, he will find that form. So I'm happy that he's gotten runs. And I'm happy for Keshav Maharaj as well because Jansen and Coetzee, they've been amongst the wickets pretty much every game they've played. But Keshav Maharaj was the hero with the bat versus Pakistan. And then he got four wickets versus New Zealand, bowled an absolute worldie to clean up Jimmy Neesham. And then also to Gill in the next game. Mm. Keshav Maharaj is like that silent hero that no one's talking about.
He's kind of always been like that, hasn't he? I think if you're a spinner from South Africa, that's your lot in life. I tried to talk to him about this once. I interviewed him and tried to allow him to speak. And a lot of the retired spinners were very vocal about how they felt. And Keshav was a little bit more like, no, I don't really want to get into that and, you know, talked about the positive things in it. But yeah, look, it's your lot in life if you're a South African spinner to be overlooked a little bit. And I don't think anyone didn't think he was good coming into this World Cup. It's just that, you know, when you've got 90 mile an hour bowlers and all these big, thick men smacking sixes in everywhere, who gives a shit about left arm finger spinner? Which is fair.
Yeah.
In general.
I think a lot of people, including myself, probably expected Tabrizi Shamsi to out-bowl him. But now at this point, I'd go for Maharaj with four paces. But Lungingidi also was clutching his hamstring. So here's to hoping he's all right because that would totally throw South Africa's hopes.
They got Lizard Williams though, don't they? They've got Lizard Williams who I thought, did he bowl in one game? I want to say he played in one game.
He did.
I thought
he played versus England.
Yeah.
If I'm not wrong. He might have played versus England.
So it was kind of a bye, but I thought he bowled well.
Well, Australia. Now, of course, we have to talk about them as well. And Glenn Maxwell fell off a golf cart or something and yet another injury due to golf. He had a concussion, but apparently he's fit and firing again. I read a piece today in which he was banging them hard in the nets. And also Mitch Marsh, you know, he had returned to Australia for some personal reason and he's also back. And Steve Smith is suffering with vertigo. Those are a lot of issues. And in the midst of all of that, Marnus has scored an important 71 versus England. So how do you see all of this stuff pan out? Do you just go to the original team that was winning?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, they've got, what, five players in form.
Yeah.
And they've got two players who have been in form at times in this World Cup outside the side, right? So they will probably bring them back in. And then if people are actually fit, then they'll have a chance. As someone's just said, Dr. Daywalker said, the Lizard Williams played against Bangladesh in that game. But yeah, look, I think you don't overthink it. You just try and stack the team with seven players who are in form rather than five players in form and make it work. I clearly don't really rate Marnus at this stage the way he's playing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he probably held the batting order together the other day enough for them to get that score. I think I said that on a previous Uncovered. It's not that I didn't think he could make an innings that could matter. It's just that the other innings are so slow that he would cause issues. And perhaps that's what he's done already. I think they will make some changes when they have their full strength team back. But they've had a lot of injury concerns as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. And tomorrow's a big game, more so for Afghanistan, actually, because if they win this one, then they'll really start to dream versus South Africa, particularly if they get South Africa to chase. That'll be a real, you know, treat to watch, I suppose. And Pratik Jha is saying Australia is boring. Anyone else but them, please? Well, I'll tell you who isn't boring. It's my man Zorbi. He got three wickets against England again. He's also probably going to end at, you know, the top of the wicket-taking charts. I know Madhu Shankar has eclipsed him at this point, but expect Zampa to be up there again. And I just feel like, you know, if Maxwell doesn't make it tomorrow in a game versus Afghanistan, I don't know, man. Adam Zampa will be the only spinner Australia has, and that will be a bit of a concern for me.
Well, I don't think that'll matter against Afghanistan, though, will it? Because I'll just whack it in short and hope that works, won't they?
True. Yeah, probably not against Afghanistan, actually, because they're probably troubled by pace more.
I was going to say, what's the pitch? I thought the pitch was not supposed to spin, but I'm now completely forgotten where their game is.
Yeah, same, actually. Let's check real quick.
It's Wankhede, right? So,
sixes, lots of sixes.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think Afghanistan's best chance is just picking all their spinners and trying to bamboozle Australia, but I don't think that's how Australia just aren't going to have spinners, right? So they're certainly going to go. They're going to play their style of cricket. You're right. Head can bowl, though.
Head can bowl. Mitch Marsh might come back into the team because he was getting runs. But then again, against spin, I would be a bit iffy to have Mitch Marsh at number three versus a lot of spinners. You know, doesn't sound like a great idea to me. But we'll see. I mean, Australia aren't really stressed right now. They will most probably make the semi-finals. I don't see a world in which they won't. So I don't think there's a lot to worry over there, but they probably want to have their, you know, first string 11 ironed out before the semi-finals. That's what I think.
I think that's fair.
England, on the other hand. Yeah. I think England, on the other hand, they could miss out on a Champions Trophy berth. And, you know, against Australia, like we mentioned earlier, they were better than before. They could have won that game. And Vokes got four wickets. Malan and Stokes got 50s. But as Ben Stokes said later in the press conference or earlier in the press conference, I can't remember when that press conference was, they've been crap. And I feel like there might be some ODI cricket soul searching for England to do as a nation. That do they care about this format anymore or do they not?
I don't think it's that they don't care about it. I think that they did the smart thing. This is the thing that... I think it's okay to have a go at them, but they did the smart thing. They went, well, we don't have any major one-day tournaments to play for, so let's pivot completely to T20 cricket. They won a championship there. They did what you're supposed to do. Then they came back, and when they came back, it didn't work the way they thought it would work. So the players certainly care about it. Jason Roy and Josh Butler and Joe Root have all talked about that. I don't think it's a case of not caring. I do think it's a case of not being able to flick the switch like they thought they would. But, you know.
Yeah. Did you listen to what Moyne had to say?
I saw the quotes. I don't think I saw some of the quotes. What was it?
So the gist of it was that, if it were up to him, the younger guys would be playing this World Cup. I mean, that seems a bit rash because England still had a lot of those players who won that World Cup in 2019. So, of course, you'd go with your experienced lot. I don't see that.
Was he not saying, though, now? Wasn't he saying that they should have pivoted to the younger players? Because there was that footage of the game where they show the bench and it's like Sam Curran and Harry Brooke are sitting next to each other. And I know they're playing for the Champions Trophy and all that sort of stuff. But I was sitting there going, is it that the two players you want to be out in the middle at the moment rather than, you know, these other older guys.
Particularly because Stokes was supposed to have that knee operation during the World Cup. That's been delayed. He's not going to play Test cricket for a bit. I don't think England have benefited from this.
I'll tell you what, him playing against Australia after talking about that knee operation, I was like, what are you doing? Like, what is the point? Like, even for the Champions Trophy, I'm like, I don't care. Don't play in the Champions Trophy and keep your Test captain, maybe T20 player, for a couple more years. Well, why would you? Anyway.
Yeah. Or maybe someone like Nitish is saying in the comments that he meant that after the World Cup, not now. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I didn't even read that article properly, but I was just a bit, you know, I was like, okay.
Yeah, so my reading of it was he was saying that they're already out. They should be pivoting now, which I think is a very fair way of looking at it. Coming in, they thought they could win this tournament. There's absolutely no doubt about that. So,
I mean, we thought that they'd make the semifinals at the very least. And that piece that you wrote, in which we did the highs and lows, England's low was a semifinal exit, and they are not even close to a semifinal. They might not even make the Champions Trophy. So as things stand, things are looking quite bleak, but they've got that Netherlands game coming up. And if they win that, then they could have the confidence to defeat Pakistan. And that's always also on the cards, right? Because Pakistan, even if they're in contention, they've been shit. They've been terrible. They've just been a shadow of the team that they've been over the past 4 years. And you could also make an argument that they weren't playing the best teams in that time, at that point, you know, because everyone's playing the IPL at that point and no one really cares about ODI cricket either. They send their B teams and stuff like that. But I'm going on a tangent. I want to talk about Afghanistan so we can end this. Mm. And it's important to talk about Afghanistan because they're in with a proper shout. Look, they defeated the Netherlands this week. And, you know, for the Netherlands, really, apart from Engelbrecht, who scored a 50, no one really put up a fight. And what I liked about Afghanistan was that, okay, Nabi was the experienced guy. He got 3 wickets. But then once again, you saw Rehmat Shah and Hashmatullah Shahidi score 50s. And that's been the trend throughout. Everyone has stepped up in this team. And that's why they have won 4 games out of 7. And now they, you know, if they beat one of South Africa, Australia, or, well, if they beat Australia tomorrow, they will dare to dream that they can defeat South Africa as well. And then they would literally qualify for the semis with fate in their own hands. Afghanistan will believe, right?
It's incredible to think that the two things that might stop them from qualifying are that they lost to Bangladesh, right, in that first game. And the second one is that they've been chasing so comfortably that they've been doing it in third gear rather than trying to get net run rate. Those are the two things that might actually hold them back from qualifying.
That's true.
And it makes no sense. Like, nothing of what they've done here has made sense. Look, I love the way they've gone about it. I think they've played fantastic cricket. I don't expect them to be on the verge of qualifying. But, you know, if their spinners can get something out of Wankhede, which is unlikely but possible against Australian players, then if they bat first against South Africa, I'm not back at South Africa to chase anything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's very, very important to kind of identify how that loss to Bangladesh might just cost them so much because they're a better team at this point. They should have won that game. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, if Rehmanullah Gurbaz, you know, plays the way he does versus Australia, if he comes good, that's the only permutation in which I see them winning at the Wankhede. But I'm all for a fun story over here. If Afghanistan somehow miraculously make it to the semifinals, I love it. I love that narrative. Real quick, before we end this, which two teams are not making it to the Champions Trophy?
Well, we haven't talked about Netherlands, have we?
We have not.
I mean, Netherlands should go into the game against England thinking that they can win it, shouldn't they? Am I wrong?
Yeah. They should also look at their running between the wickets. If they look at those two things, that's going to be fine then. Four runouts, was it?
Or maybe, you know, maybe just making some runs in the top order would also help them. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You would have to say England and the Netherlands look the least likely to go through at the moment. But I haven't looked at the net run rate. What's the Bangladesh net run rate situation? So I never thought I would have to look at the net run rate for the bottom of the table.
But apparently more stakes to play over here.
Yeah. Sri Lanka. I forgot about Sri Lanka. So Netherlands net run rate is really bad because of that Australian game, isn't it? So look. Even a couple of close losses might be enough towards the end for them. So they play England and India. So that's their problem. Their last game's against India. So they have to beat England, don't they? Really?
Yeah.
And then you've got Sri Lanka, have New Zealand. You would assume, as you said before, unless it rains, that New Zealand should just absolutely smash their faces in. And then Australia might have already qualified before they play Bangladesh, but they certainly look in a... No, sorry. Yeah, they play Bangladesh, don't they? the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
who else do Bangladesh play? They play Australia and?
No, they've only got one game left. They're one of the teams who's played eight. One game. Yeah.
Yeah, so things are looking quite bleak for them then, I'd say.
Yeah, so then you've got England. So you've got England who have one win, but have the game against the Netherlands and Pakistan. So you would have to say England at the moment looks like the least likely to go through, but they should beat the Netherlands. That gives them two wins, but then there'll be a bunch of teams on two wins. So I mean, I couldn't tell you because it might actually come down to net run rate.
Yeah, well, you guys let us know in the comments below who you think will not make it to the Champions Trophy. And yeah, I think that pretty much wraps up this Uncovered episode. A long one, but of course, there's so much that's happened that it makes sense. But thank you to everyone who came in the comments section. Of course, do subscribe to this channel and Jared's other YouTube channel, and you'll get all sorts of fun content. Thank you for your comments and thank you for your super chats. We'll catch you again next week. That's all for now. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are many other extras as well, including a Discord channel. There's a link to those in the show notes. Please review, subscribe, and tell all your friends about our show. Word of mouth is the best way of making our podcast grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bharat Sundaresan and Bayram Kazi. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston. Each episode is produced by Ishit Kuberka at Sound Potion Studio. The team from 42 help us out with the video side. Orajoti Senapayu and Maida Akam, both producing podcasts, while Mukunda Bandredi is the head of our YouTube content.
Feeling lazy about promoting your podcasts and videos? Memento FM has your back. Their seamless platform cuts and promotes all your content effortlessly. It's laziness approved. Try Memento FM today.